some of the top names and people that have done the TV shows and the writing on one of mankind's most mystifying subjects. And just a couple of weeks ago, I had on this show Mr. Tracy Torme, a gentleman that for years had researched and had been pushing to make a movie about what he felt was one of the most mysterious abduction cases in recent UFO history. And when I say recent UFO history, I'm talking about the last 15 to 18 years. Well, tonight on my show, I have the subject of Paramount's new movie, new feature-length film, Fire in the Sky, here with me as a guest. I have waiting in the wings Mr. Travis Walton. First, though, I would like to say that tonight's show is being brought to us courtesy of a brand new publication down in Palatka, Florida, something called The Ufologist. And I'm going to be telling you more about that publication as the evening goes on, so I want you to be sure that you have a pencil or a pen or a piece of paper around. But this is one of the most humorous and lively publications that I've had the pleasure of looking at since I was at work at UFO Magazine. So, get your pencils, get your pens, and get ready to take down some of the information I'm going to be throwing at you a little bit later. But now let's go to the show. Travis, good evening.
Good evening, Don.
And it's a pleasure having you here.
Nice to be on.
Thank you. You know, Travis, I know that there are many, many people out there now that were not perhaps originally aware of your story and of the things that had happened to you, but I do know, and I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but I'm the director of research for UFO Magazine. And about 3 years ago, there was, or perhaps it's 4 years ago now, there was an article in there, and I don't even recall now who wrote it, but the magazine received a very nice letter from you telling us that we were one of the few publications to treat your experience with respect. I don't know if you may even recall that.
Well, I think it was the accuracy I was complimenting you on, but anyway.
Okay. I know that for many, many years you basically shunned the public spotlight, and you just absolutely wanted to have, at least from all accounts that I've heard, anything to even do with this subject. What changed your mind?
Well, I guess I was persuaded by Mr. Torme. You mentioned him. I'd turned down these kind of offers, but his approach was that if he could create something that would allow people to experience what I'd lived through, you know, sort of vicariously live it for themselves, that maybe that would open up their minds and they could be more objective about looking at the evidence.
Well, since your case happened all the way back in November of 1975, the idea and the concept of people undergoing experiences similar to yours have become much, much more commonplace.
Yeah.
As you know, last year, Torme wrote the basic television screenplay for Bud Hopkins' book Intruders, which was on CBS. This had to gratify you somewhat, seeing that this was not perhaps as isolated as what you may have thought about it. Would that be accurate?
Well, you know, I don't know, because I've kind of, my strategy for coping with this whole thing has been to sort of shy away from the subject, and, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm really pretty poorly informed on what's been going on out there, and, you know, when Intruders came on, I did see it, but, you know, that was new stuff to me.
Right. So. Well, I guess one of the easiest ways, and I know that you've been doing so much radio and television in the last couple of months because of the film, but would it be a big imposition? Because I know there are a lot of people out there that would basically like to hear the story from your lips. Could you give us a rundown on?
Yeah, I'll give it to you briefly. It was November 5th, 1975. You know, just an ordinary work day. There were seven of us. We were we just finished a day's work in the forest there. It's a remote mountain area here of Arizona. And it was starting to get dark, so we were going to head home. We loaded up our chainsaws into this truck. We had a crew cab truck, double cab truck, so that way, you know, all seven of us fit in the truck. And we were headed out of this area. And as we were headed home, we saw a strange light coming through the trees. And right off, we knew something was odd about that. At first, nobody really said anything, but everybody kind of went silent, you know, because they'd been talking and stuff. So everybody sort of saw it at one time, but didn't, you know, talk to each other.
Yeah, and could I also, Travis, ask you to please just speak up a little?
Okay.
Because you were kind of fading on me, too, and I've got some good equipment in here.
Okay. All right. We saw this light coming through the trees. When we got around these trees where we could see the source of this light, we saw this glowing disc-shaped object hovering just less than 100 feet away. And we instantly knew what this was. I mean, there was no doubt in our minds because, you know, somebody yelled out, "It's a spaceship," because it was close and so unmistakable that there it was.
Okay, what exactly did you see? Was it the classical type of disc? Was it some other shape? Or?
Yeah, it was basically a disc shaped like two pie pans put lip to lip with a dome on top.
Okay.
And it was metallic, and it was glowing, and, you know, this was close. It was unmistakable.
Now, approximately how far from your truck would you guess it was?
It was less than 100 feet away.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this was not some little point of light off in the sky. We knew what we were looking at. I just assumed that this thing was just going to shoot right off and be gone. So, I jumped out of the truck and I ran towards this thing.
Okay, now, in the film, Travis, and I'm sure that many of the people that are listening to the show tonight have been to see it, D.B. Sweeney, of course, portrays you in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I'm sure, because I stopped when I was at the premiere and I saw that scene, mm-hmm. and I said to myself, would I do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Would I jump out and charge towards something that I had no idea what it was? And I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, oh my God, you know, that would be the last thing I would do. So why did you do it?
Yeah, I guess that's a question a lot of people want to know, because I get that a lot. And, you know, the only way I can explain it is, I guess you'd have to know me back then. I was kind of a reckless sort, and you know, on top of that, I was really curious. I was thinking, you know, that this thing would be gone in a flash, and I'd miss my chance to see it up close. And, you know, so as I got out and headed towards it, these guys were screaming at me to get back in the truck, which, you know, being the way I was at the time, just kind of sort of egged me on. And
basically, it was kind of a macho thing. Well, you mm-hmm. guys are going to sit there and be afraid, and I'm going to show you I'm not.
Yeah, or act like I wasn't anyway. I was as scared as they were, but I guess I was grandstanding a little bit. But I'm not that way anymore. I think that was the thing that changed me, too. Anyway, as I got up to it, the sound suddenly got louder and more powerful. I mean, it just kind of shook my body, and I said it kind of vibrated the truck at that point. And it started to move and rise up and rock and seemed to get brighter. And, that scared me even worse than I was already scared. The guys were yelling at me to get away from there. And so when it did that, I jumped down behind the end of a log that was sticking up there, and I was for cover, you know. And I was thinking I'd better get the heck out of there, like they were saying. And so I stood up, raised up to go, and something hit me. I just, it felt like a physical blow, you know, like I'd been hit by a truck or something. I just went numb and blacked out.
And you lost count. Okay, we're going to have to stop right there, Travis. I've got to take a quick break. And I also want to give out, I know a lot of the people out there that are listening tonight may have questions. So if you can hold on for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Okay, my name is Don Ecker. Tonight's show, my guest is Mr. Travis Walton, who is the subject of Paramount Pictures' newest feature film release, Fire in the Sky. True story that happened in November of 1975. And if you would like to speak to Travis or myself this evening, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, and tonight we're speaking about one of the most famous UFO abduction cases, the case of Travis Walton. But there are many people out there that have had strange and sometimes almost inexplicable things in their background. And one place that you can find out, if in fact there is anything there, is by calling our friend Yvonne Smith, who's been a guest on this show several times. And now we're back to the show. Thank you for waiting, Travis.
Yeah.
The phone lines have already started to light up. Before we go on with the story, do you want to take a couple of calls?
Sure.
Okay, great. We are going to line one, and we have Fritz from Westlake. Good evening, Fritz.
Good evening, Don and Travis. Travis, yeah. All I want to say is I'm so happy for you that your film finally came out and you had your day in court, and the whole world is knowing now what really happened. And the interviews on the radio and television was unbelievable. The UFO settings are very low right now, but you're film has brought so much publicity from coast to coast. It's unbelievable because I tracked down all these radio programs and they're talking every week about that film. Travis, I want to ask you something. Do you think there's a second coming for you where you will meet the visitors, especially the humanoids, the alien humanoids in the spaceship? Is there a second visit, you think, in the making?
No, I don't, and I hope not.
Why do whatever you say you hope not? I mean, by that you have been seasoned now. I mean, perhaps if you turn on your mental powers, who knows? I mean, they must have left something in you from them. So there should be a way of connecting them if you really wanted it to happen.
Well, Fritz, let me ask you: are you looking at this as a very positive exercise?
Oh yes. Now the film was the abduction sequence, of course, was fictionalized, was very negative. The aliens come off as the bad guys. But I think they had a job to do, and each just happened to be there at the wrong time at the wrong place.
Well, let's ask Travis how he feels about that.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of agree with the idea that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, I experienced it very negatively, and I do have to concede that maybe it was just because I regained consciousness under such extreme pain, and then I'm combining this pain with the shock of seeing these things at once, all at once like that, you know. It was quite a shock.
I'm sure it was.
A lot of the source of my...
May I say something? Travis,
yep.
I'm sure the boys out there, the ones who picked you up to Grace or whoever they are out there, are monitoring our television screens and the news worldwide, so they are aware that your film is out here. And perhaps, and I'm sure they are aware that you made a lot of public appearances. Perhaps they may pick you up a second time. Who knows? You never know, but think positive.
Okay, Fritz, we thank you for our call. We've got some other folks holding on, but keep listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And it's always a pleasure talking at you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have Sherry from Jones Cable in Lancaster. Good evening, Sherry.
Yes, good evening. Mr. Walton, first of all, I'd like to tell you that I believe what happened to you. And I've always thought it would be wonderful to encounter something like this, but I took my 12-year-old son, Eric, last week to see your movie, and I hope I never, ever, ever encounter what you've had to go through.
Yeah, I've gotten that a reaction a lot, but, you know, like Fritz was just saying, that the way it was treated was, you know, a little worse than it actually was. But.
Well, you know, they have to have that... sensationalism in order to get people to go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, my son and I have sat and talked, and that what I wish to ask you is, when you woke up and you found yourself in that chamber, over the years, have you given any real thought as to what do they do with the human beings? I mean, if you had not woken up and...
Well, now, wait a second. That part right there was the part that was totally fictionalized.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sherry, and that's something that I'm going to be discussing with Travis later on in the program.
Okay.
As we get to that point in his story. So keep listening.
All right.
Okay?
Well, okay, thank you very much, and good luck.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Travis, now, before we had to go to break, we were at the point where you were struck by this force or energy. You blacked out. Go ahead and pick it up from that point.
Okay, well... At that point, I suddenly blacked out, The guys in the truck said that a powerful beam of energy came out of the bottom of that craft and hit me in the upper body and just sent me flying through the air. They said it looked like a grenade went off in front of me. And they said I hit the ground limp and as a ragdoll, and so they thought it had killed me. And they panicked. They took off and drove a short distance. When they could see that it wasn't following them, they stopped and had this big argument. They said they fought over what to do. Some of them wanted to go back and see if they could help, and others were just too scared to consider the idea. But this is one difference from the way it was in the movie. They all returned to the site.
They all did?
Yes, they all did. The others were just too scared to remain there.
Well, you know, I've known Tracy Torme for a number of years, Travis, and we've discussed this particular case because of his great interest that he had in it. And one of the things that that he stressed was that you basically really felt, I guess the best way to put it would be abandoned when your buddies took off in that truck. And of course, on the one hand, I can certainly understand why they would want to get the heck out of there. But did you feel somewhat betrayed or abandoned by them?
Well, you know, this kind of came up later. And you know, I think that, you know, Mike feels real responsible for that because every time he would get interviewed about it, the interviewers would lay this load of guilt on him, you know, about why would you leave your friend, you know. But, you know, I think, you know, the problems between him and I over that have more to do with, you know, him projecting those feelings onto me rather than me, you know, challenging his courage or whatever, you know, at that time. There was a little bit of problems over it, but, you know, mostly I think he was just picking up on this guilt from people that were always asking him why he would leave his friend.
And I think it's true, isn't it, that even in a small town like where you're at now, it's even more intense.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, look, Travis, once again, we have to take another quick break. It won't be quite as long as the last one. We have some folks waiting on the telephone to speak to you, too, so please hold on.
Okay.
Okay, the beginning of the show, I told you that tonight's program is being brought to you courtesy of the Ufologist Show, and we have Dr. John from El Monte on Liberty Cable. Good evening.
Hello.
Did you have a question for my guest?
Yes, I did, but first, Don, when are we getting to the 2 hours here?
Well, I'll tell you what,
still
Dr. John, we're still working on it.
Right.
We've got to get some more advertising. You got something you want to advertise?
I hear you. I'll
okay.
call you about that. Yeah, I do. Actually, Walton, Travis.
Yes.
The only thing I haven't really heard about yet, during the 5 days, have you been through hypnotherapy to find out what actually did happen during that missing time?
Yeah, but it was of limited success.
It was limited?
I was only able to, really, you know, what happened there was that all they were really able to get at was pretty much what I remember when I was returned.
Okay, well, how many times have you went
through that? I was finally able to verbalize these things without just breaking down.
Yeah, I understand. I've been there, too. However, have you been through this hypnotherapy lately?
No.
Okay. Sometimes these things, from what I understand, you know, there'll be blocks that they'll be released later on.
Well, you know, John, in the 5 or 6 years that I've been interfacing with people that have expressed having undergone this experience, the majority of them that have been able to get something out under hypnotherapy have also encountered a block where it seems that the hypnotherapist cannot go beyond that. And I'm aware of several cases where they were afraid of physical harm coming to the person under the hypnosis had they have tried to go further.
Uh-huh.
So this is not unusual.
Yeah, I didn't think.
Okay, well,
I've seen the movie about 4 times. So I thought it was excellent.
Well, you must be one of those folks that loved it then.
Yeah, I understand. Hey, thank you much.
You bet, and thank you for calling. And we are going to Rich from Lancaster on Jones Cable. Good evening, Rich.
Hello. I want to address something to Mr. Walton there.
Do you have your TV on, Rich?
Yes, I do.
Would you turn it down, please?
Surely, just a moment.
When you folks call in, make sure to turn down your television or radio because we get a feedback here and it goes out all over
that.
The satellite. You bet.
Okay, Mr. Walton, I'm an outdoorsman, like you were depicted in the movie, and I suppose you are.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of, unfortunately, I've had a lot of missing time experiences, approximately one per year since at least 1990 and probably before. I remember I've been divorced since 1974, and I remember while I was married to my wife that I would go away in the car and I'd come back and she'd accuse me of being gone excessively long times, and I thought she was just exaggerating and teasing me or something. I never took her seriously. But I've had a lot of problems like this. I've also had encounters out on the road driving at night, and I've had like lights come up behind me. I think it's a car going to pass me, and they just flat vanish. And I'm not a rubber room, nominee, but I've had a lady friend who used to be a nurse look at two indentations behind my ears, one on each side. And she says, it looks like there's scars there. And she asked me if I've ever had my head operated. And I said, no, never. And I saw a metal object, didn't appear to have, just a silver object in the daytime out near Barstow, California, about 1974. And someplace between Boron, California, and North Edwards, California, about an hour and 45 minutes of time just vanished as though time never existed. And I have no control over this. I don't know when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. I've talked to the lady that you referred, the MC of this program referred to earlier, Yvonne Smith.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I just don't have the $50 she wants per session to interview me. I'm on disability right now. And I was wondering if there's a way I could possibly get in touch with you after the show or sometime write to you to address or something, because I've had a lot of strange experiences, and these I've been having nightmares for years that won't quit. Back in 1990 I had 36-37 hours vanish.
Okay, hold on just a second, Rich. Travis, is there somewhere where if folks want to write to you that...
My mailing address is Post Office Box 1072.
1072?
Yeah. In Snowflake, Arizona. 85937.
Say again?
85937.
That's in Snowflake, Rich.
Yeah. Oh, he really does live there.
Yeah.
That's what it said in the movie. You know, it's funny, I watched your movie there, and it was spooky. It was like I was reliving something. I was scared, and I'm an outdoorsman, and I'm not afraid of anything.
Well, you know, you're not
the
only...
I was scared to death watching
it. Rich, you're not the only person that that has expressed that particular fear. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put you on hold. We've got to take the half-hour break.
All right.
And when we come back, go ahead and finish up because we have some other people waiting. But I don't want to cut you off short because I think that you have something to say, all right?
Thank you very much.
CRN, the cable radio network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners. CRN does not endorse or object to any topics or views discussed in the program.
Zine, if you'd like.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, Travis, let's get back to the story. Now, this is where from what I understand of your story and your incident, this is where what actually happened deviates from how the film depicted it. When you came to, you were not in an area like D.B. Sweeney was portrayed in. I mean,
No.
It was a far cry from that, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't like that at all. They were looking for an organic look there that just wasn't like what I experienced. It also was not any kind of an environment like you see in a science fiction movie with lots of blinking lights and, tubes and panels running all over the walls. And,
It was a very featureless sort of place. Very smooth and clean and very linear. It was a metallic room. And
almost like a hospital, for example, an operating room?
Yeah, and, you know, when I first regained consciousness, that's what I thought. Because I couldn't see very good at first, but I remembered going up to that thing and being hit. So I thought I'd been hurt and that I was in a hospital. But
which seems logical, right?
Yeah, at the time it did, but once I got to where I could see these things standing over me, you know, that's when I knew I definitely wasn't in a hospital.
Okay, now, here on this show, Travis, we've had a number of, over the weeks, we've had a number of discussions about Fire in the Sky. And there are folks that think it was a wonderful movie, and then some of the real hardcore UFO researchers were apparently outraged by it because of the deviation from the plan or the story that you gave out, mm-hmm. and how it was depicted by Paramount. How did you feel overall? Because in the film itself, it without a doubt shows a very negative experience,
yeah.
and even though you had a very mysterious experience, it wasn't quite like it was depicted, was it? Did you feel funny about that?
You know, I can see in retrospect that it wasn't as negative as I experienced it, but I did experience a lot of very terrible emotions at the time. And you know, my main concern was I was against changing it at all, of course, but the main thing that I wanted was that people were going to walk out of the theater feeling the same kind of emotions that I felt in going through all this.
No, absolutely.
And so, you know, there were things that were done that did not happen, but still were actually better at evoking the emotions that I experienced than actually the experience itself would have been if they had just gone strictly in a documentary approach to it.
Sure.
And, you know, for example, I regained consciousness in a very small space, very cramped, very difficult to breathe atmosphere. And so, you know, there's this scene in the movie in which there's this membrane over my face and I'm struggling to breathe. Well, you know, that scene depicts the suffocation and claustrophobia I was feeling far better than it would be to just show someone standing there, you know, looking panicked and panting or something, you know. I that was just one example. There's several incidents in there that you know, tend to evoke the emotion I was feeling, even though it wasn't what happened to me.
Okay, we have some more calls waiting, Travis. We have Barbara on Century Cable in Santa Monica. Good evening, Barbara.
Good evening, Mr. Acker. Basically, you took my question away. I was going to question about the fact that the membrane and the atmosphere inside the craft was depicted in contradiction to his story, and also that what I felt were very frightening medical experiments were performed in the movie, and this contradicted from the story from what I'd heard, and that basically I just have an editorial comment that you know, I felt that the story was very misleading, and that since it's pretty much represented that it's based on a true story, that there should have been some kind of disclaimer, because I feel this does a disservice to the UFO field by basically depicting what I would think of as a nightmare. I understand that, you know, that there's, of course, a Hollywood ization involved here, and Mr. Torme basically admitted to that.
Did you hear the show with Tracy?
Yes, I did. And I also saw Mr. Walton on the Geraldo show where some of these points were brought up. And he, of course, said what he just put forth, that it was, you know, an attempt to depict how he felt. But for people who aren't familiar with the story, and I would expect that a great majority of the moviegoers are probably not totally familiar, then I felt like it was a very misleading presentation of what had happened. And,
well, you know, 90% of the movie doesn't have anything to do with what happened aboard the craft. It's more
the surrounding events. And I think the movie stays much truer to real life in those parts than...
Yes, well, up until basically that point, I enjoyed the movie very much because it you know, did seem to follow the storyline, but it seems at that point it really digresses, and it to me there should be some kind of either a comment or something that it's, you know, that here we're digressing from the, you know, from the true story.
Well, you know, Barbara, if I might interject something here, we've had many, many, many phone calls, not only here at UFOs Tonight on the CRN, but also at UFO Magazine. And many people have wanted to know how we felt at the magazine about this movie. Now, when I went in there completely open-minded with the idea that I was going in to see a film. I've been, you know, involved in many things over the years, and I know that Hollywood is not necessarily always 100% on the mark. So I just went in to be entertained. And I've got to tell you, I enjoyed the movie to no end. I didn't expect to find out the secrets of the cosmos when I went there, but I did expect to be entertained, and I can say without a doubt that that was one of the most entertaining films that I have seen in years. Just like I was a Vietnam veteran with two tours in Vietnam.
Yes, well,
and Oliver Stone's Platoon was not what happened to me.
Well,
I mean, that,
you know,
was Hollywood eyes, so,
I,
you know.
I understand that, and I think it basically the movie was very well directed. For instance, in the beginning, when the five of them are fleeing in the truck, I felt the terror. I felt the confusion. I felt, you know, I thought that was very well depicted. I mean, as a theater goer, you were in the truck and you were scared with those men. And
basically, get me out of here.
Yes, exactly. Now, if the director had that ability to portray that kind of emotion in that scene without deviating from the true story, then why couldn't he have done it on the ship?
That's well, as Tracy, if you recall, several weeks ago when Tracy was on. When they were in pre-production, according to what Tracy said, Bud Hopkins Intruders came out on CBS. And I guess, and you, Travis, can probably state this better than I, an executive decision was made that they didn't want their aliens to look like the aliens on Intruders or Communion or, you know, any of these other films or books.
Yeah.
Now, don't ask me why. I mean, you know, if this is what we're encountering, then by golly, we should, you know, we should be told that, but it
yes,
was...
Yes, and then it shouldn't be... all the ads and all of the promotions shouldn't depict it as the Travis Walton story.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't say it's a documentary. It does say based on the story.
Exactly.
But, you know, I don't feel that I should be held responsible for what was done there. I did not have the power...
Or
no,
you,
no, I was trying to see as far as you felt if you had been sold a bill of goods on it or
I,
you know,
that wasn't
was
even
your
a script.
Compliance.
I did see a succession of versions of the script, and the special effects were never in any of the versions that I saw.
Okay, Barbara, all the lines are lit up. We've got to get moving, but thank you for your call.
Thank you, Don.
And we have Eric from Jones Cable in Lancaster who has been patiently waiting. Good evening, Eric.
Hi, Mr. Wallen.
Yes.
Hi, my name's Eric Ade, and I just like to say that I believe what happened to you, but when I saw the movie twice, and, you know, I was scared because I believe that happened, but if that was just like a made-up movie, I wouldn't be scared because I'm like a horror fan, but I'd like, you know, maybe, like, I'd like to, like, meet you personally, talk about this, because this, like, scared me to death. I'd like to know if you think that they meant harm or they were just, experimenting, because in the movie I'm sure it's a lot different in real life.
Eric, can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 12.
12 years old?
Yeah.
Have you been listening to the show for a while?
Yes, sir, I have.
Okay, you have an interest in UFOs?
Yeah, well, I don't like study them or anything, but this movie just like freaked me out because like I don't want that to happen. I've always wanted to encounter UFOs before I seen this movie, but if this is what they do, you know, I'm sure they don't mean harm, or they'd probably be scared of us if we did this to them.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Travis. You were going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, if anybody does want a documentary account of what happened, I am re-releasing my book here in 6 or 8 weeks, and I'll guarantee you I won't be making deviations.
Well, who's publishing that, Travis?
That's not decided yet.
Oh, I see. But they're basically going to re-release it.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, look, Eric, we've got to move along. We have some other calls.
All right, but Travis, I have your address, and can I write you? And and asking more questions in the letter.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks.
Okay, we have Tom in Orlando, Florida on satellite. Good evening, Tom.
Hi there. I had a question for Travis. Hopefully he can hear me. If he can talk a little louder, I can hear him better, too.
Okay.
During the early days of my life, I had an experience with a motorcycle accident where I had the typical, you know, out-of-body experience. And I wondered if the experience that he had changed his attitude toward any of the people he's known all of his life, or if he has a different attitude toward death itself as a result of this experience. I'll hang up and listen on the TV, okay?
Okay, Tom. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I definitely just completely transformed my attitudes towards lots of things. And I was a bit of a risk taker before that. But I am the kind of guy who makes sure everybody is buckled up before we drive off. And, you know, I'm much more conservative and cautious in my behavior now.
Yeah, well, I think that also, Travis, to be honest, comes with age, too. You know, one thing about your story that has absolutely fascinated me personally because of some areas of research that I've been involved in is concerned with the point where you had the physical contacts. You went charging out of that room. And a little bit later, and I don't want to take away from the story, but you encountered some individuals that I guess by any stretch of the imagination could pass for somebody on any street corner in this country.
Right.
Some very human-looking people.
Yeah.
What I'm fascinated to know what your impression was. I know that you had tried, if I recall correctly, you tried to talk to them. There was absolutely no communication. How did they come across to you?
Well, they didn't seem hostile. I got an impression of that wasn't negative. They just seemed to be a little bit indifferent to my extreme distress. But as far as wondering who they were, what was going on there. You know, it's a bit speculative. I was thinking, my first impression, that these people were from Earth and that I was being rescued by them. And, you know, that's still not impossible. But there's also the possibility that they were somehow genetically created by these beings. Or maybe there are other races like the human race.
That are very similar to human beings.
That are very similar to humans, yeah.
Okay. We have Melinda on Multivision in Anaheim waiting. Good evening, Melinda.
Good evening.
Did you have a question for Travis?
Yes, I do. Actually,
yeah.
I kind of have more of a statement. Travis, I'm an abductee, and I have seen the movie. I feel like I was somewhat personally offended by the movie, and of course I don't hold this against you. I feel very badly for you. In both what you experienced and I'm sure what you must be going through emotionally in your own reaction to the movie.
Yeah.
I feel that on a personal level, you cannot be completely satisfied with it, and I don't ask you to comment on that at all.
It does put me in a difficult position.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said it does put me in a difficult position.
Yes, I understand, and so I don't ask you to comment. What I would like to have you comment on, though, is as an abductee, I'm really concerned about the image this puts out to people who might be feeling that they might be an abductee, and to the general public when they see this movie and see such a fearful, negative view given that really is not true. I mean, most of what was presented there was fictional and not true to the abduction experience.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of abductees, so I'm not just saying this for my... Yes, I am saying this about my own experience, but I'm also saying this because I know a lot of other abductees.
Well, Melinda, do you feel that your experiences have been positive?
I've had a mix of some that have been positive and some that have been very negative. But what I feel is the way in which it was presented, of course, being dragged down a hallway through gravel by your feet, but that's not true to any abductee's experience. Being enwrapped in a cocoon, I mean, I have not heard of these experiences, and I know quite a few abductees, and I think it presents an extremely negative, fearful image to the public.
What we have to keep in mind, and I mean, Travis, you know, has already stated that he is not really involved in the overall UFO thing, but what we have to keep in mind is when the folks at Paramount made the movie, they were not making it for UFO people. I mean, as much as we may like or dislike that, they were making a movie to make it sell commercially. And, you know, a little bit of scary and terror and blood and gore sell a lot better than the truth.
But this isn't about selling a movie. This is a really important subject, and this is a subject matter that happens to thousands of people.
Exactly. Oh, perhaps millions of people, Melinda. But
yes,
my point is that is not Paramount or any other movie maker's concern.
Yeah, and that is very unfortunate because I think as a UFO community, there was a lot of trust put in Tracy Torme because he is known for doing very good, positive works in
but,
the past.
But Tracy didn't have the final say-so either.
Yeah, that wasn't Tracy's work, really.
That's true.
You see, that came down from on high.
Well, I just want to say, Travis, I really feel for you. I'm sure this must be emotionally difficult for you.
Well, I'm going to try to correct all that
experience
with the book, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm familiar with your book and the pictures presented in it, and what I saw in the movie is just, you sit there watching it totally aghast. This is not the Travis Walton story I know. You know,
and that many people have said that very thing, Melinda.
Yeah,
believe me, you're in a large crowd.
I know, and I know many other people.
But I still think the night that I went, I had a box of popcorn. I liked it. I had a good time.
Well,
and I didn't go there to be enlightened. I didn't go there to learn the secrets of the cosmos. I went to see a movie. And
let
it go at that.
But that is exactly what I think is wrong with it. I felt it was a very well-made movie. It was very entertaining. I was thoroughly entertained.
Well, let me ask
but
you
that's
this.
What's wrong. It's entertaining, and people are going to come away.
I'll ask you the same question that Tracy asked somebody here the night that he was a guest. Okay? If you took out the abduction part of the movie, which is what, 8 minutes, would you have enjoyed the film?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
There were minor inaccuracies, but overall, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Melinda.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Travis, now let's get down to the nitty-gritty. As soon as we take one more quick break, I want to talk to you about Larry King.
Okay.
Does it sound like a deal?
All right.
Okay, hang on. All right, and I want to... Travis.
Yeah.
We had the pleasure of seeing you and Mike Rogers on Larry King Live several weeks ago.
Yeah.
With none other than our old friend, Phil Klass.
Yeah, everybody's friend.
Phil's been around for many, many years, as I'm sure you know. He's been one of the biggest critics of your case since your case happened back in 1975.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to tell you, next week, Phil Klass is going to be a guest on this very show. And one of the things that I want to ask him is, why did you lose your temper, Phil? Can you give us a little insight on that?
Well, I think that, it kind of must have touched a nerve there.
I could not believe what he said to Mike Rogers, right on national TV.
Yeah, lose your profanity on live.
And if you folks didn't hear it, I'm going to play a recorded thing next week when Phil's on and get his feedback on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it basically came down to when you guys or when Mike accused him of being a disinformation specialist. Do you truly feel that?
Well, it's certainly a strong possibility. I don't have any proof of that, but certain things indicate that could be the explanation for things that...
Well, he was in touch with you, Travis, or in touch with folks close to you right after the case happened.
Well, yeah, you do have to say that because, there in Larry King, he was in another part of the studio, and that was the closest he's ever been to me in the first time he's ever addressed me directly.
Okay,
in,
now that... I want
18 years.
That's something I want to point out. He never spoke to you directly?
Never made an attempt to call me or write to me. And this is a guy that's made part of two books devoted to attacking me, and he hasn't even bothered to try to communicate with me. You call that thorough research?
Well, you know, I pointed that out to Phil. I did a live debate last year in Denver on stage with Philip Klass in Denver, Colorado. And, of course, I've been involved in these investigations for quite a few years now. And I pointed that out. He has yet, that I'm aware of, to any abduction case that he's ever dwelled into to speak to the actual principals. Now, he did speak to, correct me if I'm wrong, he spoke to your brother?
Just for a few minutes, one time.
He spoke to Mike Rogers?
Yeah.
Did he speak to your mom?
No.
Well, there were several other people that he did speak to.
By telephone.
Okay, exactly, yes, by telephone. Did you ever try to contact him to find out what, you know, what the story was?
Well, I knew what the story was.
Even then?
Oh, yeah, you know, that he was, you know, basically out to attack it before he knew anything about it. I mean, you know, he had just heard that it happened, and he started sending letters to the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization attacking the case, and then he had to retract a lot of the stuff he said then. He was claiming that there were four officers present when my mother was notified, and then he had to back up and say, well, I guess, you know, I was wrong about that. But, you know, he was firing away before he even knew what happened.
Well, you know, Travis, there's so much still that I would love, and I'm sure that many of the listeners out there would like to hear about more about your case. And we're running very close on time now. We're down to just about a minute and a half. Let me see. Would it be possible for you to do the show again? Would you come back?
We could do that sometime.
Okay. Your book is going to be coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah.
If you could, I'll tell you what, if you could send, let us know when it's out so we can get a copy of it. I'd like to review it for UFO Magazine.
Okay.
And would love to have you come back and do some additional, show here. There's just unfortunately not enough time in an hour. But do you have any last thoughts or observations or remarks or statements you would like to make?
Yeah, I think, you know, you say you're going to have this guy on next week. I think my ears are going to be burning when that happens.
Well, I was going to suggest you call in.
Well, you know, I don't know if I can get the station here, but, you know, I would just like to warn the listeners that whatever he's got to say, there's a whole nother side to it. He's already had to make retractions on some of the things that he's been saying.
Well, I'll tell you what, hold on when we go off the air, Travis, and I can speak to you. I can tell you how you can call in here. And, you know, just hold on for just a second, if you would, okay? And we are just about out of time.
We're out of time. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Did you recognize that voice, Travis? That was Larry King. He was telling us we're out of time. So I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. It's been a great pleasure. Stand by for just a second, and I'll be right with you. For all you folks that are out there, next week we have none other than Philip Klass, arch skeptic, debunker, and self-described skunk at the garden party, is going to be joining us here on CRN on UFOs Tonight, and you'll have a chance to speak to him following Phil Klass. The next week we are going to have Stanton Friedman, noted nuclear physicist and longtime UFO investigator, is going to be doing the show here talking about his book, Crash of Corona, among other things. Hopefully the week following Friedman, I'm going to have George Knapp come back. George Knapp, of course, is the well-known award-winning television journalist out of Las Vegas, Nevada, who right now is in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, doing some research over there. And after that, who knows? Keep your eyes to the skies. Here's the song, and hey, we'll see you again in a week.